The light high bell of an ambulance sounded. It is one of the great achievements of society, Peter Walsh thought. That was progress. Quickly, cleanly, the ambulance rushed to the hospital, having picked up some poor creature, someone knocked down at a crossing perhaps, as might so easily happen to oneself. Every vehicle pulled aside to let the ambulance pass, and busy men pictured someone's poor wife inside. But one must stop these thoughts of doctors and dead bodies before they went too far and made one sentimental. I would stand here and cry, he thought, if no one could see, for one may do as one chooses in private. For moments like these, in which things came together, like life and death, took one's breath away. Years ago, Clarissa had told him, sitting together on the top of a bus, that she felt herself everywhere, in everything there was. It helped her to believe, for she had a horror of death, that the unseen part of us might survive in people or even places after death, perhaps. Looking back over their long friendship of more than 30 years, he understood something of what she meant. However short, broken and painful their meetings were, this morning, for example, they were interrupted by Elizabeth coming in like a beautiful long-legged horse, the effect of them on his life was enormous. She had affected him more than any person he had ever known, and she appeared to him like this in all her moods without him wishing it. One scene after another at Boughton came back to him. He had reached his hotel. He crossed the hall, collected his key and some letters, and went upstairs. He pictured her most often at Boughton, in the late summer, on top of a hill, her cloak blowing, her hands on her hair, crying out to them that she could see the river below. Then, after dinner, old Joseph Breitkopf would sit at the piano and sing in a trembling voice, and they would try not to laugh. But they could not help it. They were always laughing, laughing at nothing. Oh, this blue envelope was a letter from her. That was her writing. Reading her letter required a huge effort. It would be another of their painful meetings. How heavenly it was to see him. She must tell him that. That was all. But it upset and annoyed him. He wished she hadn't written it. Why couldn't she leave him alone? After all, she had married Dalloway and lived with him in perfect happiness all these years. Heavenly to see you. She must say so. He folded the note and put it away. Nothing would make him read it again. To get that letter to him by 6 o'clock, she must have written it as soon as he left her. It was very like her. She was upset by his visit. She had remembered, perhaps, something he had said, how they would change the world if she married him. But now, instead, there was being middle-aged and ordinary. And then, with her energy for life, her toughness, her power to overcome difficulties, which was greater than anyone's he had ever known, she forced herself to put all that aside. He could see her going to her writing table, tears running down her cheeks, wanting to make him happy, and writing that one line, "Heavenly to see you." And she meant it. But it would not have been a success, their marriage. He pulled off his boots and emptied his pockets. Out came his knife, and a photo of Daisy, all in white, looking charming. And he could hear the pretty, dark-haired girl crying that, of course, she would give him everything he wanted. And she was only 24, with 2 children. Indeed, what a mess he had got himself into at his age. The thought would disturb him in the night quite forcefully. Suppose they did marry. It would be fine for him. But what about her? Mrs. Burgess, a sensible woman whom he trusted, had said Daisy had to think of her position in society. His absence in England might give Daisy a chance to think again. She would have to give up her children when she got divorced. And after Peter died, she would be alone, with no good friends. But Peter Walsh didn't mean to die yet. Anyway, Daisy must decide for herself, he thought, and took out his white shirt. For he might go to Clarissa's party, or to the theatre. Or he might stay in and read a book written by a man he used to know at Oxford. If he stopped working, that's what he would do, write books. And it might be better, as Mrs. Burgess said, if Daisy forgot him, or just remembered him as he was in August 1922, standing at the crossroads in the evening. Yes, he would go to Clarissa's party. He would go because he wanted to ask Richard what the government thought it was doing in India. He wanted to find out what was on at the theatre, what concerts there were. Simply, he wanted people, conversation. He would have dinner, he would smoke a cigarette, and he would walk through the warm summer night among the lively, beautiful young people to Westminster, to Clarissa's door.